not.
The Beatles.
Those circuses on the air.
The president doesn't.
Sometimes you feel like a...
That means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you
tear down this wall.
Here's Johnny.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Oh, we're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John has been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
Yes, welcome back. This is Sound Sessions with Michael and Kevin.
In for Dave Plyer. Bye. What an intro that is.
That is a great intro. Man, way to go, Dave. That's awesome. Speaking of Dave, how's it going, Dave Schwann?
Hey, good morning, you guys. I hope you're having fun.
We are. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I won't bother you with my sinus and allergy problems right now, but I made it in. I'm okay, and we will get through the morning.
So this is round two.
And I knew I was going to have fun with you guys, so that's why I'm here.
Yes, it's always a good time with us and you, Dave. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Please feel better soon. But let's get this started. You know, this is the This Is History segment. And lo and behold, Take Me Out to the Ball Game was registered by Albert von Tilzer in 1844 today.
1844? I thought you were going to play the song there.
Yeah, there it is.
Okay.
What a classic.
Mm-hmm. Harry so Carey himself.
Harry Carey singing it.
Not in 1844.
Not in 1844.
Great, great, great grandfather of Harry Carey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to think of my favorite, you know, because they do it. They always have the celebrity singers come in at Wrigley to sing it. I don't think anyone will ever beat Ozzy Osbourne. That was just the best.
The best and the worst at
the same
time.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't even make out a word he was saying. It was hysterical.
Dave, do you have a certain memory from the Take Me Out to the Ball Game song?
Mike Ditka.
Oh, yes. Really? I don't know if I caught that one.
The story goes that he was late. He was on his way and got held up in traffic or something. I don't know. But he was late. He just barely made it for the seventh inning and just went in and said, okay, take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I'll ever get back. And that was it.
That's very Ditka.
But I do remember being at Wrigley several times when Harry really was getting that tradition started at Wrigley. And it was just fun to be a part
That's
of
that. That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, that was, gosh, 30 years ago.
Wow. I really can't believe it. And don't forget, we had our own WGN's Pete McMurray, Patty Vasquez, and Nick DiGilio singing.
They
that
all
one
did
time
it too.
Too.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So moving forward, 1889, the first U.S. national holiday on centennial of Washington's inauguration. Interesting.
Run that by me again.
In 1889, it was the first U.S. national holiday on the centennial of Washington's inauguration.
Oh, okay. On the centennial. So, 1889, 17. Yes, that would be 100 years.
Yep.
Right, okay. Well, I was thinking when you said his inaugural, so yeah, that would be right. That was to begin his first term as president. By the way, it was not in Washington, D.C. It wasn't finished yet. It was New York City.
Really?
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, it was New York City. I think John Adams did take the oath in Washington, D.C. But, when George Washington was first sworn in, who, by the way, coined the term Mr. President, he was the one that came up with that. It was
in
New York.
That's so great.
Yeah, he was pretty adamant about the fact that we were not going to address our elected officials as Your Highness or Your Majesty. That was for... You know, kings and queens. We don't have kings and queens
right.
in the United
no,
States.
No, that's important.
And someone said, well, sir, how should we address you? And he just kind of said, well, what about Mr. President?
I like that.
And from that day to this, here we are.
Man, George Washington, what a smooth operator.
He really was. He was a very dignified, smooth operator. terrific, very interesting guy to get into. You know, he's much more of a distant figure than, well, for that matter, even Abraham Lincoln. We all know all the Lincoln stories,
right,
and everything about Lincoln. But George Washington is a very interesting, interesting life, very interesting life.
I mean, just imagine being the first president, like, of a brand new country.
I know.
The thought of that is unfathomable.
What do you do?
Exactly. Yeah.
How
it's like,
do
what
we
is
go?
My
okay.
job? Step one.
We fought all this time and worked hard to break away from Great Britain. Now we're on our own. What do we do?
First step, call me Mr. President.
Right.
All right. Well, in 1891, moving right along, the Wrigley Company is founded here in Chicago, Illinois. In 1981, the 29-year-old William Wrigley Jr., 29 years old? 1891, 29-year-old William Wrigley Jr., who was, and we got a little taste of the music right here. Ah, takes me back to when I was living in the 1891. It came to Chicago from Philadelphia with $32. This William Wrigley Jr. came to Chicago from Philadelphia with $32 and the idea to start a business selling Wrigley scouring soap. Wrigley offered the premiums as an incentive to buy his soap, such as baking powder. And later in his career, he switched to the baking powder business, which in which he began offering two packages of chewing gum for each purchase of a can of baking powder. And the popular premium, the chewing gum, began to seem more promising, so Wrigley actually became the majority owner of the Chicago Cubs in 1921 with all this money he made from this gum.
This is so interesting.
This is insane.
And then built the building across the street
from
us.
I was going to say, yeah. What I really like about this is, like, he was doing the baking soda, and then all of a sudden his little, like, bonus started taking off more. He's like, okay, we're going to go with that then.
Never know.
Right, exactly.
It might start out as kind of a, you know, like the B-side of a record becomes the hit record.
That's
How
right.
How often has that happened?
That's right. Years?
That's a good point. Man, just think he was... Wrigley's scouring soap. That was what he came to sell to people. And then the gum is what took off.
Super interesting.
Interesting, yeah.
So moving right along here, in 1877, Bell Telephone Company of Antwerp, Belgium, forms the Bell Telephone Company. It was organized in Boston, Massachusetts on July 9th, 1877, by Alexander Graham Bell's father-in-law, Gardner Green Hubbard. I think we have a little bit of audio here.
Hello, everyone. I'm from your telephone company. We know that dial telephones are easy to use. However, mistakes in dialing do occur. These mistakes waste a lot of time and can cause someone else to be inconvenienced and probably irritated. I'd like to tell you about a few pointers to be followed in dialing. Always be sure that you have the right number. Consult your directory for any
That's a good tip.
You're not sure of.
Step
Write
one.
Write the number down. It saves time to keep the numbers in front of you while dialing. Now, let's use this demonstration model to dial our number. Always.
So there you have it. There's a little audio.
Okay, I have a question for
sure.
both of you gentlemen.
Sure,
yes.
Have either one of you ever seen and or used a dial telephone? Where you
like
dialed,
a turn dial?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I think very early on I have some early memories of maybe at my grandparents' house.
At your grandparents'
yeah.
house, they would have one. Yeah,
yeah. Same at my grandparents' house, but I never got the chance to use the phone that was the dial tone, but it was attached to the wall, and you pulled that string and put it up to your ear and
oh,
also
yeah.
talked to the dial phone.
Operator.
I haven't used that, although we were several years ago, we were up in northern Michigan in a very interesting location outside of Traverse City, Michigan, and it was a combination antique store and deli and little knick-knack shop, and there was a old-style phone like you would see in Andy Griffith where you hold the earpiece up to your ear.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that phone still worked.
That's incredible.
I don't have no idea how because, you know, dial phones, I think, are no longer usable. You know, they're obsolete. Even if you had one, I don't know if they, you know, if they would be acceptable with the technology that we have. But this guy said that phone worked. So,
jeez.
I don't know.
Remarkable.
You know, guys, get this. My parents have just in the past month given up on the landline phone. And
I think my parents have also done that. Dave, do you have a landline still?
Yes.
Do you?
Yes.
I don't, yeah.
And it's same. Used less and less, I must say. The only calls I get, and this is why I pay for caller ID, the only calls I get are the ones that you don't want to answer, right?
That's exactly right.
The scam calls with the weird area codes.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Those are the ones that I get on the landline. A couple of close friends that live out of town will call on the landline from time to time. But mm-hmm. yes, that's true. It's the cell phone.
Yeah.
It's bizarre that that's going out of style. Like, that's no mm-hmm. longer in vogue.
It's crazy.
Having your own – that was always such a big milestone because you think, okay, you're going to be born. You get married. You have kids. And then you get your own phone.
You have your own phone.
Your own phone.
Well, you finally made it.
You know what? I can remember, guys, when you didn't buy a phone. If you moved into a house or an apartment, the phone company came in and installed the phone.
What?
With the instrument, yes.
Interesting.
You it was part of your monthly phone bill, as you might say, rent. You were renting that phone. But yeah, especially when I was a kid, I can remember standard black colored dial telephone sitting in our hallway was part of the phone company. It wasn't ours. And if there was something that went wrong with it, service man came in, took it out, put in another one.
That's like the modem nowadays. You rent that from the cable company. But, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. But, you know, when I first moved to Chicago, it was just starting to be, and you went to an AT&T store. There wasn't anything else yet. And you could buy the phone. But that was new in the early 1980s, where you could buy
right.
a phone.
Yeah.
Jeez. Well, well,
see what you guys learn?
You're a wealth of knowledge.
I'm just old, that's all.
All right, well, let's move right along. We've got in 1905, this is a cool moment, Cubs' Jack McCarthy becomes the only major league player to throw out three runners at a plate in one game. All wow. were ends of a double play.
Interesting, that's pretty great.
Man. All right, that's what about
quite an achievement
no
when
kidding.
You think about it.
Jack McCarthy, and now just think, 1905, throwing around three runners at one plate, 2016, win the World Series.
Wow. That's Thank all it takes,
yeah. Yeah.
So, moving right along here, 1937, first U.S. Social Security payment made. Social Security is the largest single program in the federal budget. A recent post from the Congressional Budget Office reports that in 2017, Social Security benefits will cost about 4.9% of the total U.S. GDP. Over the next 30 years, that will grow to about 6.3% as millions of boomers retire and collect benefits. The gap between benefits paid and revenues collected will grow from its current state of 0.3% of GDP to 1.8% by 2047.
And they continue to, kind of drag their feet on solving the problems with this
yeah.
thing, you know, for people your age.
They're saying it's going to be obsolete.
Yeah, it may well be. So even though you're paying into it, you may want to think about this down the line as to talking to your representatives about
yeah.
having something there. I mean, your money is in that system. You deserve to have it back at some point.
So. Absolutely. Well, I hope everyone enjoys my hard-earned money. I'm giving hope on that, to be honest. In 1939, the NBC and RCA had its first public TV demo with FDR opening of the New York World's Fair. One of the first to appear on television was a very young Betty White.
Would you believe that? Wow.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Man, still a stone-cold fox, too.
So, in 1961... Do you know this, Dave?
I should.
...to bring you the constant variety of sport.
Oh, Wide World of Sports.
That's right. ABC's
the
Wide
of Victory and the Agony of Defeat.
ABC's Wide World of Sports debuts, as its title suggests. Wide World of Sports broadens the definition of sports for many Americans. The Museum of Broadcast Communications has called the Wide World of Sports the most successful and longest-running sports program in the history of television. Mr. McKay's triumphant introduction to the program included the line, "The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat," much like you just said, Dave.
That, I remember seeing that so many times on Saturday. The thrill of victory with a guy, you know, jumping up jubilantly running a race. And then the agony of defeat, the video for there was a guy just absolutely tumbling down a ski slope that looked like he was, you know, he was just, you know, in pain and breaking legs and falling down the, you know, as they would show that, you know, they would see that line, the thrill of victory, and this guy just elated by winning a race. And then the agony of defeat was this guy, this poor guy wiping out on a ski slope.
Jeez.
See, I know we're running kind of short on time, but do you remember those blooper videos that used to be really
big? Oh, yeah, those are the best.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. All right, well, in 1983, Harold Washington sworn in as Chicago's first black mayor.
That was a national story.
Yeah.
Welcome at Kennedy King College, where he told students to brace themselves in the closing days of the campaign.
There are people running for office. There are opponents who would try to confuse you and abuse your mind with false information.
Harold Washington was actually an American lawyer and politician who was elected as the 41st mayor of Chicago. Washington was noted as the first African-American to be elected as the mayor of Chicago in February 1983, just a few years before Kevin and I were born.
It's true.
It's true. Washington served as mayor from April 29, 1983 until his death on November 25, 1987. Man, what a turning point here in Chicago. And now, you know, you see all the great things that he did, the closest connection that I have to it is the Harold Washington Library.
The library.
Oh, yeah.
Name
for him.
Yeah. I must tell you that being at his campaign headquarters in February of 83 when he won the primary, still one of the highlights of my working in this business.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
How
and
cool is that?
I was there as a rookie reporter, mm-hmm. and the night just wore on. It wasn't until 3 o'clock in the morning when he finally came out and declared victory. That was a three-way race. He was running against Jane Byrne, who was the incumbent, and Richard M. Daley.
Man.
Wow.
And he won it.
And he won, yes.
Yeah.
What huge names here in Chicago.
Seriously.
Yeah. It was a three-way race. He split the ticket, is what he did, and then beat his opponent then was Bernard Epton. And believe me, gentlemen, that was a bitter general election between him and Bernard Epton.
So cool you got to cover that. Good for you.
That was great. It still is a highlight for me. Yeah.
Well, we are about out of time here. We got two more. NBC announces Conan O'Brien to replace David Letterman in 1993. Conan hosted his late night show, replaced Jay Leno as host of the Tonight Show for only 6 months, and then moved to his show on TBS. And in 2004, Oldsmobile builds its final car, ending 107 years of production. So that about wraps it up. Dave, thank you for your time with that. It's always a lot
of fun. I talk too much, but it's just fun talking with you guys. And I'm glad we got a chance to do this.
Absolutely.
This week and last. Yeah.
It's an honor.
So well, thank you.
Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll get to Walter's perspective. This has been Sound Sessions here on WGN.